Well, before we light this candle, let me tell you about my friends at GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting. Love these guys. GoToMeeting by Citrix. If you need to meet, if you need to get together, and we do it here. We use it here all the time. Every time a new client comes on board, pow, GoToMeeting. We use their technology. You use their technology. Use your webcam. You can make a meeting an HD video conference. You can start hosting meetings in seconds with your Mac, your PC, your smartphone, your tablet, what have you. And you can sign up for free. That's right, a 30-day free trial. No credit card required. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, use the promo code Adam. That's GoToMeeting.com, promo code Adam. Hey, Chickpeas, Ace Man here. Before we get started, I want to thank you for sharing this product with a friend. Honestly, the only reason we're here and the lights are on and we've been going strong for over 4 years now is because of you and you telling a friend, a loved one, and or a coworker. So thank you so much in advance and enjoy the show.
This is Corolla Digital.
From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Corolla Show. Adam's guest tonight, author Bret Easton Ellis, plus Allison Rosen on news, Paul Bryan on sound effects, and a visit with David Wilde. And now, American Neurotic, Adam Corolla.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for spreading the word. Thanks for sharing the good news. David Wilde here. Bret Easton Ellis coming in a little bit later. Allison Rosen, good day.
Hello, Adam Corolla.
And Bald Brian.
Let the baby have his bottle.
At Tiny Human wanted that oldie but goodie from Twitter on hashtag Top Drop.
We will talk a little Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I'm guessing, with...
I can go for that. Yes, can do, no. Adam Corolla.
Now, I found out it was Hall Notes, and then I found out it was Nirvana, and then I found out it was Kiss, and then I realized Kurt Cobain would be very upset about this.
No, you know, Kurt Cobain loved Kiss, was actually on the Kiss tribute record. They did Do You Love Me, I believe it was.
Really?
Yeah, so I think...
Huge fan of Lick It Up?
Who isn't? Ironically
it's
or not...
It's only right now. Really? It's only right?
I think...
What?
Yeah, here it is.
This is written by adults.
I can't wait for the All-Star Jam to this.
Yeah, I think if Kurt Cobain would go, I think he most likely would go with Gene Simmons in a limo with a shirt saying, like, corporate bands still really, really suck, or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Insane that it's 25 years after you form or you have your first release album?
First release, I think.
Uh-huh. That's a weird, you know, I kind of think the NFL has it. Well, the NFL says, I don't know, 7 years after you retire or 5 years or whatever.
Five.
I think 5 years after you retire, you're eligible.
After you play your last game, so
right.
You know what I mean.
Right, whatever it is. But you can't really do that with bands because as long as they're state fairs, there's going to be bands that are coming out of retirement to play. So you can't really, you don't want bands to retire, so you have to just sort of pick something, and I guess it's 25 years after your first album drop.
I think it's pretty funny that Kiss and Nirvana get in at the same time, though. Think about, like, you know, we grew up with Kiss, and
yes.
Nirvana seems, even though it's a long time ago, they seem still very modern and, you know, having taken the turn of making modern rock, but they get in the same moment. It's kind of perfect.
It's crazy that Nirvana is 25 years old. Mm. That
it's unreal.
Yeah, because... If you just woke me up in the middle of the night and you went, give me an example of new rock, I'd be like, Nirvana, Smashing Dumplings,
Stone Temple Guys.
But see, I wonder what Natalia thinks of Nirvana. Like, if you were to play them for her, would that sound like grandpa rock to her?
I don't know, but she did piss me off when I was, I think Man Eater or another Hall & Oates song came on and she announced to the heavens that it was one of her favorite songs, but she's doing it just to fuck with me.
She was raised right.
Yeah. Now, here's my thing with Hall & Oates. Like the guys, like some of their songs, but to me, you need to have, look, you know, OJ was a great NFL player, but then he cut someone's head off. And now we feel differently about
him. And so Maneater would be equivalent to that murder?
No, Maneater has caused far more pain than that. That's just two lives exactly. that didn't directly impact me.
Yeah, it's as
Maneater has caused, spread a way bigger net. Mm-hmm.
It's like if OJ drove his white Bronco up onto the off-ramp and took out the people cheering him on after he killed the two people. That's
even that, I wouldn't mind if those people were gone, because imagine those people have had kids by now and have been in and out of the joint in rehab.
At least Maneater's an off-white Bronco. You know, it's got a little soul
to
it.
No, what I'm saying is, you know, Nicole Brown Simpson, she wasn't going to cure cancer or AIDS. You know what I mean? She was going to hang out in Brentwood, have a few more nights on the town. She doesn't deserve what she got.
Adam, she was going to pay taxes.
Okay.
I'm just telling you what
alimony.
What Adam would
say. She was an earner. I mean, her husband was an earner, would have kicked it down to her, and then we would have wet
property
our beaks.
Taxes.
But I'm saying, if you take...
Brentwood's a high-rent district.
All right, but hold on. What songs do we have? We have Adult Education. We have Maneater. We have I Can't Go For That. Mm. And we...
It's the world's worst jukebox.
Before you go there, I want some equal time, because I will say... I'm not
sure... Oh, Family Man. Oh,
they didn't write that one. That's Mike Oldfield.
Doesn't matter. Combined,
with Sally Wilson.
The damage that Hall & Oates has done with those four songs is much greater worldwide than what OJ did.
I voted for them. I don't know if I'm supposed to reveal
Hold
that.
Hold on. Here it comes.
I'd vote for them again.
Wait a minute. She just might. All right, here, it's going to kick in. This is what... I would have played this the whole time where I was yelling at you not to vote. Oh, here it is. Okay, this is a horrible band.
Don't blame
this
them.
This isn't music.
No. Don't blame them for the 80s.
The Why? 80s.
You know, don't
John
blame
Hyde
them.
Did bring the family in the 80s.
They're part of
they
what
made
created
the 80s.
That 80.
They made
you.
It miserable.
Yeah. I don't mind this song. I will be honest with you. This one is not the one of the... I don't mind...
That's like saying don't blame leg warmers and shoulder pads for the 80s.
Right.
Or neon.
That's right. Or Nagel. I know you thought he said bagel, but it was Nagel. I know everything that sounds close to bagel, you're confirmed. The point is this. They were the 80s. They made the 80s. Oh. All right, it's coming again. Yeah. It's not even a song.
It's a record.
It's such shit.
It's actually by the guy who wrote Tubular Bells, the Exorcist theme. How with a little weird.
Wow. I wish OJ would have killed him before he wrote this song. Number six. This is a top 10 song.
I think it's kind of your theme song. I believe you should work this into the next movie.
I Can't Go For That was number one. Adult Education may be more insulting than this.
I love that one.
What's the message of Family Man? His bark is worse than his bite. If you push him too far, he just might.
Because he may look like a sort of like safe family guy, but there is sexuality and danger there. That's the message.
Yeah. They wrote great zero entendre songs. Maneater. Ugh.
There's the one. I had them on. When I had a TV show called Musicians on Bravo. They were my first guest because I love them. And when we did the set list, they said we're doing Maneater, and I didn't want to say, you don't have to do Maneater. But I did. They did do. On the other hand, Fair Time. I think She's Gone is maybe one of the best songs ever written.
Good. There you go. That's one. That's OJ winning the Heisman.
Yes. So they get in the Hall of Fame.
We still count. There's a body count. Here. My ears. It's Manny. It's adult. I got to hear some Adult Education now.
Sure. Love this one.
Look.
Produced by Nile Rodgers.
Adult.
We can't tell what year this is from or decade, can you?
You are so white in your taste.
Because this is so funky?
This is very funky. White boy. Next year on the Black Friday show, you got to weave this in. This is very soulful.
Afternoon in the homeroom.
This is sort of like Nabokov with Nile Rodgers producing. And I think actually Nile Rodgers did produce this track. And this is one of those things. It was a new track for Greatest Hits. It had to be great, and it was.
These are all top 10 songs, which means just... just dirigibles carrying sacks of cocaine just bombed program directors' offices and just buried them.
But do you get
at
it? It's
jail.
Not just about school. There's also another sexual double meaning. It's not just about adult classes.
I remember hearing this shit on the radio. And by the way, this is back before you had choices. You know, I just had a radio in my truck. I didn't have a CD player. I didn't plug in my iPod.
The Mighty 690 play this?
Yes, I'm sure it did. This was my only choice. Fucking Family Man and Man Here. Come on. I'm gonna put on an explosive vest and charge the stage when they come up there.
I just feel like you guys have a little double, triple standard going here. For instance, Brian, you can, our Brett Easton Ellis, great, a Graham Parker fanatic I just discovered on his podcast when he talked to Judd Apatow the other day. But the film pays tribute to the music of Huey Lewis, Mr. Huey Lewis.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think Huey Lewis is far more to blame for the 80s than Hall & Oates. I think Hall & Oates has a higher percentage of great material.
I'm with you that Hall & Oates has, Hall & Oates is like living in the desert. It's got the highs and the lows. You know what I mean? Huey Lewis is more living at the beach. It doesn't vary that much. He lives between 61 and 78 degrees. You know, he's just kind of not hot, not good, just kind of in the middle. Now,
except to Jimmy Kimmel, who loves him, right?
Well, Jimmy loves Huey, and I gotta say, I'm completely down with working for a living.
You
but
like Huey Lewis on the news?
I cannot stand Stuck With You. Mm. That's a nursery rhyme that both my kids. One of my kids could write if I first hit him with a frying pan. That's the only way my kid could write. Yes, it's true. I can see you're. It's a nursery rhyme.
Right.
But again, it's not Huey's fault. I think it's the program director's fault. Maybe Huey's just filling up a B-side.
And he literally did come in, because the thing is, Hall & Oates, their music before the MTV era is amazing. I think Abandoned Luncheonette, Atlantic Records, early RCA Records, Sarah Smile, that stuff is just stellar to me.
Right.
The MTV
era. And then they started sucking. Sucking.
One man's sucking is another man's blowing.
No, look. Thank you. You're a baseball player. It's not how many hits you got. It's how many times you get to the plate and how many times you get a hit and how many outs did you get. That's your batting average.
Who has a higher, more disparity between good and bad? Because Hall & Oates has some great and some awful, as we've heard today. Mm-hmm.
Billy Joel has some very big disparity.
I was going to submit Elton John.
David Bowie.
I was going to say Elton John because when he's doing... I don't want to go on with you like that.
I can't go on with you like that.
That's the worst fucking song.
A lot of prepositions there.
One of the worst songs on the planet. Hey, I would say Rolling Stones have some pretty good highs and some pretty fucking low lows.
Angie is a fucking piece of shit, in my opinion.
Oh, I'd say Aerosmith.
No, Angie's a poor example of their piece of shit song. That's a song you don't like, but that's not a bad song. They have horrifically bad songs.
Aerosmith's a good nomination.
Yeah,
too.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Rats in the Cellar, Toys in the Attic, two best ones. All right, where the hell were we? A couple things. Let me give a little love to one of our sponsors, and then I'll share a couple things with you guys that I wanted to get into. First off, in the department where. Brian, you've been around long enough to know that everything I complain about comes to fruition, or everything I say is not true, turns out not to be true.
I can sadly verify this.
And people want to know why, and it's easy. You all have the answers. They're all just within you. Mm. When you hear, and I don't know, Gary, if you can find it or not, but when I used to pass these billboards that would say, 44,000 Americans died of secondhand smoke, I just go, how could that be? Mm. And then I would talk to Dr. Drew, and I'd go, have you ever treated anybody who died of secondhand smoke? And he'd go, no. And then I'd say, but in all your years as a physician, in all the hospitals you've worked at and all the physicians you know, and he'd go, no, doesn't. And then I'd realize, I've never heard of a dignitary or a celebrity or a neighbor or anyone going, he died of secondhand smoke. And then I realized, oh, this is bullshit, because we'd all be dead. Anyone who ever worked at a bar.
Traveled on an airplane.
Back in the day would just be dead, but yet it was almost 50,000. I mean, that basically the same body count that we had in Vietnam was also attributed to secondhand smoke. And that's when I knew it was fucking bullshit. And I was yelling. I've been yelling about that since
probably since 96. It was a big thing in the early 90s or somewhere around there.
Right. So we'll.
But wait, what is that?
We'll get you a recent article on that people have been sending me. First, Lumosity, baby. Oh, yeah. I would like to forget about Maneater, but if you'd like to improve your memory, you use Lumosity.com. It's important. You customize exercises for your brain, your bean, your main bean, man. That's the core.
A form of adult education, so to speak?
Okay. So be it. Lumosity.com is based on scientific research to help with memory, attention, speed, and problem solving. You can exercise your brain, and it's fun. You make these, you design it online. Use your iPhone, your iPad. Use Lumosity and use the app, Lumosity app. Go to Lumosity.com today. Click the Start Training Free button. Create your program and start playing and tell them you heard it from me, Ace Carolla. That is Adam Carolla. All right.
Adult.
Education. Ugh, God. I don't get it. I don't get what accomplished musicians are doing. What are they doing? Why doesn't somebody raise their hand and go, you know what we're doing right now sucks? Like if somebody said to me, I want you to write some jokes about like how bad airline food is or some super fucked out topic that was super hackneyed, I'd just go, no, that's not interesting or different.
I will tell you, not less, you know, maybe a month ago, I stood with them on the side of the stage in Ryman Auditorium. There's still audiences that go nuts for that song.
So, they love fucking Maneater.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jimmy played it at my wedding. But now he'll play it at my funeral. It's just fucking with me now. That's what's going on. All right. Something that's going to put me in a much better mood. trying to figure this out. So I'm trying to get hold of Tom Cruise. David Wilde, I feel like you could be my conduit to Tom Cruise. I'm trying to get him for this Paul Newman driving doc. And I realize sitting down with Tom Cruise is not an easy task. And he has a publicist. He probably has five. And he doesn't sit down with people because they start getting into Scientology and divorces and Oprah and sofas and couch jumping and Matt Lauer. And next thing you know, they're not doing their job or they're fired. I only want to talk to him about racing and racing with Paul Newman, which he did for 2 years.
If he started talking about that other stuff, you would shut him up.
I would start steering him toward
racing
with Paul Newman.
No, but you truly, that's all you want. And no one would ever believe that.
That's all I'm doing is a documentary on Paul Newman's driving. And he traveled with him.
He loved
for a couple of years. I guess they met in the Color Money, and then he said, "You know, you'd dig this." And they took him over to Bob Sharp in Connecticut, and Bob Sharp and Nissan put a car together for Cruise to drive. And he was really aggressive and really crazy, and he did good, but he crashed a lot. And somewhere in the documentary, Bob Sharp basically said he was going to kill himself if he didn't stop driving. And he did stop driving. Mimi, as Bob said, Mimi was not into him driving anymore. And he sensibly stopped. But he traveled around doing the circuit with Bob Sharp and Paul Newman for 2 years. And I'd love to hear those stories.
He did that movie Days of Thunder,
and
where
played the connection to that
film,
the guy's
Allison.
Film. Yes, film. Started. But so what somebody said to me is if you put together a little 2 minute sizzle reel and you do it with Book Tom, you can spread it out all over the place on YouTube and whatnot, and then someone will get it to him, and that'll get him to do it. We're not going to get through his publicist, but if we can get to him, sit down with him. So I thought I would show you guys. It doesn't need the audio, but I mean the video. But you can take a look at the 2 minute sizzle reel, and I'll shout out when there's a name that's familiar on there.
See, it was the Oscars. People vote. They say him or her. In this, it isn't. We vote and it's him and her. You either cross the finish line first or it's either him or her.
That's what I like about the guy. So he won one Academy Award, and he won four national championships as a driver.
I think he was 48 years old when he started racing, which most people are retiring.
He made the movie winning and kind of fallen in love with racing. He was terrible at first. He was very slow, and I didn't think he had a prayer.
And he wasn't racing Ferraris, and he wasn't racing
Leno.
He was racing Datsuns. It was something the average guy could aspire to.
Well, I think he liked the camaraderie, and I think the fellowship of
McDreamy.
That relationship with a fellow driver, as you know, there's nothing like it. It's not anything you can have in Hollywood at all.
I always wanted to be a jock. I skied and boxed and played football badly. I had no physical grace. The only thing that I ever found any grace in was an automobile.
Guy was technically, he was really a good driver. He just had that ability.
How do people in show business regard his racing?
I'm not sure they know he races.
Joanne Woodward.
At first, he would take
his wife.
And then later on, the movies had to work around his racing schedule.
Every year, I keep saying that I'm going to, stop all this. And so now it looks like I got a couple of really good scripts that will go during the spring and the summer. So all I have to do is burn all those scripts, you see, so I can get back in the car again.
I was worried about him. I really was seriously concerned. His whole career looked as though it was going to go down the drain because all he wanted to do was race. And that was all that he was really interested in.
They'll have to strap me down before they keep me out of these things.
So somebody who knows Tom Cruise out there can send it to him.
That looks fantastic. I had no – I mean, you're rescuing Paul Newman from a salad dressing to show what an icon he was.
People have no idea what a maniac he was about driving.
I didn't know he started racing when he was 47. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, came with his kid down to Lime Rock and jumped in the back of Bob Sharp's car, and he took him around a few times. Those old-time guys are always so cool. Somebody said, evidently when Paul Newman would put the sunglasses on, he just really couldn't tell who he was, especially those gearheads who live in the middle of Connecticut. And there's this great thing where he says somebody, after he got out of Bob Sharp's car, somebody said, wasn't that Paul Newman? And Bob Sharp said, it was Paul something or other. I don't remember.
That's funny. That was the first time I got a look at that. I don't think any of us had. It was really good.
That looks great.
Give it a B+.
Was that hard to get some of the older footage?
No. The thing that's weird about the Newman doc is there's like underground geek videos that if you have some of his cars or you're into Bob Sharp racing or whatever that is, people will feed them to you. And so I've been aware of them for a long time. And I remember seeing that thing of him going, the Academy Awards, they vote. It's him or her, but it's this. They don't vote. It's whoever crosses the line first. And I thought, man, yeah. And then I thought, that's the opening. That should be the opening of the documentary. But I saw so much footage of him. And then every time I would talk to somebody about it, they'd go, what? Salad dressing? What? And I'd be like, no, he's really into car racing. And like, oh, like the celebrity circuit? And I'd be like, well, first off, there is no celebrity circuit. I wouldn't be here right now. And secondly, no, he raced professionally. He had sponsors and he raced. That's all. He got out of the car when he was 83. And then he died 6 months later.
It's
like
wild, man.
He raced the last 35 years of his life like nonstop.
He was also such a handsome leading man that maybe I'm wrong, but my impression was it was in later performances where he really, like, absence of malice to me, not absence of malice, the verdict to me is the greatest performance he ever gave. And, that was late in the career.
He acted for basically 50 years, just nonstop, and he drove from, when he was 47 to just when he died, basically. He was in his car in his 80s driving the car.
He was. It's weird that he was an icon of acting and then started racing. Like his acting career, his place in Hollywood history was secured.
And when he was at his biggest is when he was at Road Atlanta and Lime Rock and, all these different tracks all over the country just sleeping in a trailer home, like in a motor home and stuff, and walking out and getting like right in the middle of everything would be Paul Newman.
It would also be amazing to talk to Cruise. And have you asked formally his people, or you have not?
I'm not sure if we got there yet.
Because I'll ask through whatever four sources I can. But the truth is, he should talk. Because even the idea of how celebrity has changed. Imagine if the biggest like movie star in the world was doing that now. They'd be hunted. There'd be a million paparazzi.
Oh,
back then it wasn't like it was covered like
it was a, it was a, it was a, it was a, it was a very nice thing. As Bob Sharp, who we went to his house in Connecticut and talked to him quite a bit, he was with Newman for, I don't know, 15 years, you know, the whole year. They'd go on tour, you know, if you race, you just go on tour, you know, you don't stay at the same place, you're all over the country. But Bob Sharp would say to the media, you can have 15 minutes with Paul on Friday. And if you start asking questions about Joanne's next movie and his next project, then he's going to have to go talk to the crew chief pretty quick. But if you want to talk racing, he loves racing, and you'll talk for 2 hours. So he would go prep them, and then they would talk racing. And if some dickhead wanted to know about Joanna's next movie, then he'd just leave. So they had an understanding. I think it was the same way, you know, the Kennedys had an understanding right. with the press. Like, there used to be what they would call gentlemen's agreements. Like, okay, listen, here's what you here. I'll give you access to this. We don't want to talk about this. We will talk about this. And then everyone would act accordingly. Now it's just, oh, now he'd be in a porta potty taking a piss and someone would be holding a cell phone over their head and taking a picture through the vent at his honker, right?
Exactly. But they'd be yelling like, Cool Hand Luke sucks to get a reaction out of him. Like,
right,
oh,
right.
Take a picture.
Right, right.
Or the Sting. Take your pick.
All right. Ah, stamps.com, baby. Holidays. They are upon us. You know what? Ah, the post office. I get depressed. Think about post office. You don't want to go there. Stamps.com. That's what you use. You can buy and print official U.S. postage. Use your own computer and printer. It's easy. It's convenient. You have the mailman pick it up. And they got a special offer. Use the promo code Adam. They got a no-risk trial. $110 bonus offer includes a digital scale. $55 free postage. What do you do? Go to Stamps.com before you do anything else. You click on the microphone, the top of the homepage. You type in Adam. That is Stamps.com. Promo code Adam. If you're not using this by now, it's one of those things. It's the way, it's my relationship with TiVo.
Yeah, get on it.
I had it. It sat in a box for like 4 years, and then I hooked it up, and I went, where have you been?
Where's it been my whole life?
That's right. And then I mounted it. Anyway, David Wilde.
Sir.
So when is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and what's the lineup? And I just named off a couple bands, but there must be many more inductees, and then you're part of the voting body, right?
I'm one of the voters. I don't nominate. I vote. Yeah, and it's coming up, and it's going to be in Brooklyn this year. I actually just ran into one of the producers, Gary Getzman, who's with Tom Hanks. Mm-hmm. They're looking forward to it. And the replacements didn't make it, which some of the rock and rollers, alternative rockers weren't happy about. I'm mad that your friend LL Cool J, star of the Black Friday show, did not make it this year.
But he's hosting. So that's the good news. So he'll induct himself.
Yeah.
He does what he wants.
No, but it'll be – I think it's
going
to be –
I'm going off script for a second.
Yeah.
I'm on a prompter.
Cat Stevens.
Yes.
He won't be there, will he?
Oh, he'll be there. I bet you he'll be there. I got
to
tell
you.
Oh,
you do?
I tweeted last night.
He's on the no-fly list.
I have a story. No. I
saw your tweet, but – what is Cat Stevens – when's the last time he was in the United States?
Oh, no. He's in the United States all the time. I've seen him 10 times in the United States in the last few years.
Watch this. Yeah but still. See, now it's the time.
Yeah, there you go.
No, he comes here fairly often.
He does.
He's very much a man of the world. He's been performing music. He performed at the – was it the El Rey not that many years ago? Performed Cat Stevens songs. Here's a good name drop. A rare Muslim name drop from me. Mm-hmm. I was, I think, the first person he sang those songs to after not singing them for 15, 20 years because I won the Muslim Public Policy Award with him. 2001,
I lost a lot of money on that.
Exactly. You know, at Temple, I lost a lot of money on that,
yeah.
too. But he came back with a VH1 documentary, a two-hour thing about his conversion. That was the first thing he did when he returned to sort of talking about his music. And I was the interviewer for him, and we traveled around England together on that.
Is he live in England now?
He lives in England, but he also travels the world. He's really – and he's an amazing guy, fantastic guy.
Is he a – was he Ramsey something?
Yusuf Islam.
The Ram, the other one.
What was the award you two won?
We won the Muslim Public Policy Award.
That must have been a tough ceremony in 2001.
My wife came with me.
It must have been an awkward ceremony.
Well, I think it was earlier in 2001.
It was February 2001. Oh. Mm-hmm. My wife came and we sat at the table and they had a Muslim stand-up comedian. Oh, and I remember it was like the jokes were like, Inshallah, it means it ain't going to happen, which it really means like, may Allah will it. That was sort of the joke. It killed. Then they showed a package of like, you know, Muslim terrorists in movies, and they laughed at it like it was absurd.
Take my wives, please.
Exactly. Yeah, that was an interesting night. The Muslim Public Policy Awards, downtown L.A., 2001. And then actually 9/11 happened, and then I was writing the Tribute to Heroes, and I remember weirdly writing Yusef and a few other of the heads of the organization saying, I need quotes from the Quran speaking to tolerance. Mm-hmm. And you would be hard pressed to find some great ones in the I got to say, that's not really what they specialize in.
It's not a through line?
Not a through line in the Quran.
I do that to everyone who's getting on my flight. Just to try to keep an eye on people. If they spit one out quickly, I keep an eye on them.
But I treasure my muzzy, as I call it, my Muslim public.
Cat Stevens is someone where if I hear the song playing, I enjoy it, and I own Cat Stevens music, but I never want to put it on and listen to it on my own because it just makes me too emotional.
Oh, really? I'm a fan. I am
like
a fan.
You just rock out.
Well,
to it
I
in
think
your
Allison's
home.
A fan too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But I find it too
sensitive, too
introspective.
Yes,
it's the father and son song.
Yeah,
is like
it'll make me cry.
Amazing.
No, I mean
it's amazing. But here's so his Muslim name is
Yusuf Islam.
All right, and I was yapping about this with Dr. Drew today. Actually, iTunes best new podcast of 2013.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Drew in the hizzy.
We won it last year, or we won the best overall last year, and now we got the best new one. I was laughing about this because I've always said, you know, Cat Stevens is not a name to change, but Cassius Clay is one of the coolest names ever. Lou Alcindor, one of the – these are all the guys that changed their name. But if you think of it, your name is Cassius Clay.
Yeah.
That's a fucking awesome name. Your name is Dick Trickle. Change it.
By all means, embrace
it. And how funny would that be on the NASCAR circuit? He's a NASCAR driver.
Cat Stevens' name was not Cat Stevens. It was like Steven Gregorio.
Does not matter. Yes. The chicks.
Exactly.
The bitch is called your cat.
That was cool.
That's the point.
Yes.
When your name's Cat Stevens or Cassius Clay,
right.
You keep it, man.
The weirdest fact?
Dick Butkus, he should change.
Neil Diamond's real name is Neil Diamond, but he wanted to change it to Noah Kaminsky. That's true.
Really?
That's what he thought. It was more like Art Garfunkel. And it was more ethnic and cool.
What is Engelbert Humperdinck's real name? Because that's one
Dorsey,
of the,
Jerry Dorsey.
That's one of the craziest
is
ones.
Is really it?
Yeah. Engelbert Humperdinck is a guy who wrote Hansel and Gretel, is that? Or invented barbed wire. One of those two things.
Either way, it's a crazy thing to go, I'm going to make my name super complicated and weird.
Yeah. Especially if you're sitting on a cool name.
Well, you know what it was? All those – actually, Cat Stevens was the exact moment. In England in 1963, 4, 5, 6, 7, there were all these gay managers who were taking every pretty guy like Cat Stevens or Tom Jones or Engelbert Humperdinck, giving them names, putting them in a suit with tight-fitting pants, you know, giving them an image. That was like – those British gay guys were the ones shaping rock history and trousers.
Mm-hmm. They're like, hey, you're not leaving without a kerchief.
Exactly.
Just picture them all wearing super tight striped pants with a neckerchief.
I am.
And pulled off just a little bit. Like they pulled off to like 9 o'clock, maybe 10:30.
Father and son, I stood with Yusuf, and this is after years of him not talking to anybody other than other sort of religious guys. And we went to the home where he lived. He grew up in Leicester Square, which is like Times Square. It's total middle of London sort of showbiz district. And his father ran a cafe and was a sort of – and I think he had real issues with his dad. I mean, obviously, that sort of come through in that song. He didn't – and he grew up in that show business thing. And I think he wanted – that's why the whole religious thing is partly his getting as far away from that thing he sort of felt in the middle of – you know, I don't know. It was very funny. I sat in the room where he wrote those songs, and it was very, very powerful. I happen to really be a fan of his.
I am as well. Father and Son song is great. Linda Ronstadt, by the way, in the pantheon of songs that'll bring you to tears if you're feeling the least bit melancholy. We should make a list. Father and Son will bring it to your knees. Long Time is just one of the best love songs, Unrequited Love or Jilted Lover. It's like I can almost hear it now. It's that powerful.
I'm having the same experience.
And you've spoken about it really eloquently, and also her beauty, because at that moment she was maybe the most beautiful vision ever, and she was something.
Was this circa the album cover of her in roller skates?
No,
earlier
than that.
Way before
that. She was
that.
Hanging with the Stone Ponies back then, I think.
Steve Martin, who, I don't know if you've, have you met with Steve Martin at all?
No, but I feel like he knows me.
He's not, but he's not a guy who's going to say this kind of thing, but he, when I interviewed him, he talked about opening for her when she was at the Troubadour, and he just said, holy shit, was she hot. Like,
yeah,
there was, she would
Steve
wear a white
Martin-y.
Dress. That's not Steve Martin-y, but he goes, right. She would perform in this little short white dress. The spotlight would hit her, and every Eagle and every, it would be like Albert Brooks and Steve Martin and the Eagles, who were not, you know, her backing band at
right.
that point. Every guy would just
leave that going.
Sweat, and their tongues would fall, you know, out like a cartoon character. She was something.
Yeah.
What a voice.
Oh, yeah.
Does she still tour? Or?
She actually has been. She's ill and revealed she can no longer sing because of her illness. But she could up until 3 or 4 years ago, I believe.
Yeah. Fucking time.
What does she have?
Fucks everything up.
Is it Parkinson's or MS?
Is she just, one of those.
She just revealed she had something.
Yeah, it was just, she wrote a book, recently. A memoir, and revealed it. And
I'll look it up.
We'll find it. All right. Linda Ronstadt, love that song. All right, we got a couple of calls. Allison, I want to get into that secondhand smoke BS and my hand soap thing. First, I'll take a phone call. Let's see. I'll just start at the top. Hey, Jessica.
Hey.
37, Long Beach. What's going on?
Hey, Adam.
Hey, Jessica.
I'm a huge fan and supporter of the pirate ship.
Thank you so much.
Everything I get through Amazon, through your site.
I love that about you.
I rode hard, and I've read all your books, and when people ask me to borrow them, I tell them to fuck off and buy their own, because my copy is signed.
Yeah, I know. Thank you. Appreciate
anyway,
that.
Anyway, I thought of you. I thought of you because I heard, and I wanted to see if you heard about this affluenza syndrome.
Yes, I have.
And I just wanted to get your opinion on that, because you're the first person I thought about when I heard it.
Well, it was a case of a 16-year-old kid. His parents were divorced, and kind of let him run wild, live in a mansion and booze and have all the fun he wanted to have. And I guess, I don't know, vehicular manslaughter or something like that. A couple people got killed.
Four people were killed, and then two were injured.
Yeah, his lawyer's basically saying he had no conscience. He didn't grow up with boundaries
with
or rules or
yeah.
consequences. And, you know, it's not an excuse, but whether, you know, there's different versions of this. There's a version where you just grow up in the poorest part of town with no dad around and no consequences and no discipline. And when you're 13, you join your first street gang. And when you're 16, you shoot your first person. That's that. And then this is the same. This is the rich guy version of that. There's a version of no steady hand, meaning dad's either banging a secretary or on the golf course or out of town on business all the time, and all he does is try to throw money at the problem. Or there's dad has moved to Florida and has sired a few more kids and never going to see your ass again. It's the same difference. It's no dad, no boundaries, no firm hand. I've said it a million times. There's much different roles in the mom and the dad, and the dad needs to discipline, and if the dad ain't disciplining, on one hand, yes, the guy was a little pain in the ass, and the guy was 16, and the guy was out of control, but as I said, you know, Molly Ringwald, and the Ringwald family grew up down the street from me in North Hollywood, and at a certain point, Molly went from this little sort of mousy, little freckled redhead whose sister Beth was really the beautiful blonde of the, you know, she was the beauty queen, the sister. They moved out here from Placerville. You know where Placerville is, up north. Yeah. For the beautiful blonde sister, and the little mousy redhead didn't get any attention.
That's like a John Hughes movie with the star of yes. all the John Hughes movies.
Yes. And then at a certain point, she's on the cover of Life magazine and Time magazine, like in the same month. Mm-hmm. And then somebody said to me at a certain point, I think Molly's a little bitchy and like a little standoffish. And I was like, how would you be if you were 17 and on the cover of Life magazine? You know what I mean? Like, what would we all be like if we were looking at mansions up around Mulholland at 18 to buy things like that?
That combined with when people approach her with anything, was just hello or you're awesome in this or I love your or can you sign or whatever. They bring expectations into it, and she's just another person in your life. You know, like you would meet a stranger, like, hey, how's it going? Blah, blah, blah.
I'm fully convinced that all of us could have been ruined at an early age. If my dad had a fucking nickel and he showered tons of money on me and never said no and was absent, you know, out making kajillions of dollars abroad in Dubai and stuff like that.
You might not be the humble, down-to-earth person you are today.
Salt of the earth, but yes, quiet. I was on a roll, but yes.
Can I roll a completely contrary theory past you?
Yes.
Today, we had to just write something for the college counselor for my son, my older son, mm-hmm. like telling him about what might we think of our kid. Mm-hmm. And I really thought, my kid
Hold
is...
Hold on, what you think?
They tell you, they want to know, you have to write these things.
Oh, hold on. Matt Fondelier, be prepared for an assignment in about 10 years. No fucking way I'm wasting 10 minutes. Sonny is enthusiastic.
It's just a waste of my time.
Fair-minded, handsome, and one of the most generous children I've ever had the privilege of raising.
But you've met my kids, and despite what you might think of me, they're good kids. They're good kids.
Nah, yeah, they're fives. Yeah,
they're not good.
They're not good. That's for damn sure.
But I think, like, he came out. He
Why
came out.
The
who
counselor
he is?
Counselor need you to.
We need to recommend our kid to the counselor. No, they just want to know your thoughts, your wishes, your dreams about your kid.
This reminds me, you know,
this shit never stops, Adam.
You know, the first day in class back in high school, even before that, when they'd have you write something down about like what you're hoping to get out of the class, and I never knew what to write. This feels like that, only about your kid.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you get ready, Adam. You don't know the things that your dad, your parents never did that you will be doing at these schools.
I'm tomorrow morning at 8:30, I'm going to their winter whatever. I don't know where to start. But here's what I'm saying. I don't think we're helping our children by making every single one of them feel like individual superstars. I just don't think, because they're being pushed into a huge waiting room filled with other people that feel like they're rock stars, except for there's going to be millions of them, and that's going to cause a problem.
See, the problem is I think that parents are maybe making up for something that they didn't get in their childhood, or acting on what feels best to the parent, thinking that that's what's best for the kid. No, I mean, I think if you build your kid up and give them confidence based on doing what's best for your kid, that will create something good.
Yes. And well, but so back to the initial question. Look, you take a 16-year-old, and from birth to 16, all they know is no boundaries, do whatever you want. No one's your boss. No one can tell you what to do. I do not know that me or anybody I grew up with would not be a fucking self-entitled, self-indulgent piece of shit. And I cannot say that I wouldn't be drunk driving a Cherokee with five of my friends in it. Like, there's a lot of crimes where you hear about the one where the guy went, old lady just walking down the street, guy jumps on her, starts beating her about the face and shoulders. She falls to the ground. Even after she was unconscious, he kept kicking her in the head. And you're like, fucking animal. Like, I could never, ever do that. And then you hear about the one where it's like, the guy was in the back of a Subaru Brat, and he pulled his ass out, and he was hanging it out, and the guy in the semi-truck swerved, and now we have two. And I always think, I could have done something like that. As a matter of fact, I have done that It's just nothing happened. You know what I mean? It's like the people that get all high and mighty about drunk driving. Meanwhile, we all have a Christmas party or two that we've driven home from where we've been over the limit.
Well, the number of near misses in any one of our lives, just, you know, fucking around when we were teenagers or whatever. If you think back on it, it's pretty chilling.
Right.
Probably any one of, I mean, Allison maybe less.
I was always hanging my ass out a window.
But, whether it's that or something else, we've all had our fair number of near misses.
I have circled the globe in the boot of a two-seat sports car, meaning you got the Triumph, the MG, the Datsun Roadster. Ray was in front, Chris was in front, and I was sitting on the piece of sheet metal in the back sideways, hanging on to the back of the seat, like not belted in, not anything in, and we were hauling ass on Mulholland. I've been in the back of a million pickup trucks that were like, oh, this guy wants to race, and you're sliding around in the back of the pickup truck. I mean, yes, something could have happened, and it didn't. But to me, it's still a different kind of crime than the kicking the old person in the head. Tom, 46.
Hey, yeah.
What's going on?
Hey, doing all right. Hey, I have a issue starting next year. They're not going to allow me to carry over all my vacation days. And I've accumulated, by the end of next year, I'll have 70.
70 vacation days.
70. I'm a golf course superintendent, so I can't really take them from... I can't really take a lot of days off in the season, which is here in Jersey.
By the way, you work on a golf course. What kind of grind is that? Oh, man. The daily grind.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
I've never regretted or dreaded a day going to work.
I know, but why do you need a day off? You work on a golf course. Where are you going to go to? A cubicle?
He's never taken one.
Yeah, you don't have to.
I don't have to. Every day I go to work is a vacation.
I'm just saying.
Tom, do you have kids or family?
No. I have a wife. Nope. No kids.
Okay. And do you have to take the vacation days in what part of the year?
Off season.
Meaning what? What months?
Meaning from end of Thanksgiving to maybe Easter.
But are you saying that you must take the 70 days?
Or I lose them.
So you can literally take, I mean, when you do the working days, you're taking 3.5 months off of work if you're doing a 5-day work week, right?
Exactly.
And
I mean, I would have to take the whole winter off.
Will your job be waiting for you when you return?
You know, there's projects that I want to do over the winter that won't get done if I take off.
Like fix the windmill? Things like that?
No.
Here's all I would say. Like, when you're gone for 3.5 months, people kind of move on.
Yeah.
And then when they move on and you come back,
this is a miniature golf course.
I've decided it was. I like to downgrade everybody. Either way, but you know what I'd like? I would like a miniature golf course that still had the hot-looking chick with the Miller Lights and the Bloody Marys on it driving around in
the
golf cart. Because, look, it's nice to have a cocktail on a Sunday morning at 8 o'clock when you're teeing off with your buddies, but it's more like Saturday night when you're dragging your fucking kids out to miniature golf. That's when you need a fucking pop.
Why can't we combine the best parts of golf and miniature golf? Miniature golf is the golfing, and golf is the drinking.
And if my kid was like, I want to have a party at the putt-putt golf, and I knew the hot chick, you know, the junior college chick who was 19 in the tight shorts was going to be pouring the tall boys, I'd be like, daddy could go for that. It'll be fine. We had a half or just riding over.
Absolutely.
Stuff. Okay.
Over the little hills.
Write that down. I would use half of them. I would not use all of them. I feel like you leave your job for 3.5 months.
But it's the off season. He's the superintendent. He's been there probably for 20 years. So the point is they can afford to let him go. And they can't fire him for using vacation days.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that's illegal.
All right. Anyway.
Where should he go?
But it's not like he can go somewhere for 70 days, is it? Is that what he's saying?
It's the winter. Come out here and golf.
What am I going to do? Stay home and watch TV all day?
Putt around the house.
He doesn't want to. You should be able to sell your vacation days for 50 cents to the dollar or something to other guys who would like to buy vacation days.
I can see that.
It should be like, you know, like Al Gore talking about the carbon chips or whatever he's talking about. You know, I mean, you should be able to, these units, you know, you should be able to just work, just guys. I don't know, Tom. What are you asking? Where should you go? What should you do?
What would you do if you had 70 days and you had to use them? Or things you don't have to use them, but you will lose them.
I would. What do you like to do? Do you like to do something rather than just relax?
I like to go to work.
Okay, well then go to work. You work on a golf course.
Get a second job.
Who gives a shit? Yeah, I don't care. All right, you know what I do care? The Spoils of Babylon. Did you guys see this?
No, what is it?
It is, well, first off, it's Will Ferrell, but it's Eric John Rosch's epic novel. It's now an epic miniseries coming to IFC.
IFC thing, yeah.
Yeah, Thursday, January 9th. It's a 6-part miniseries. It's got Kristen Wiig, Tobey Maguire, Will Ferrell, Jessica Alba, Val Kilmer, Jesus. Haley Joel Osment, Tim Robbins, Michael Sheen.
This read would be a lot shorter if he's listed the actors who weren't in it.
Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm.
Really fix
the premiere night will include 2 back-to-back episodes, The Spoils of Babylon, IFC, Thursday, January 9th, 10 o'clock, 9 Central. Let's not miss this. All right, David Wild, website, Wild About Music. Oh, that's Twitter,
no
sorry. Yet.
Twitter, no website.
Wild About Music is where you go if you want to tweet out to him.
Please.
Bret Easton Ellis in next, and we'll be right back after this. Oh, man, between the holidays, the bad weather, the sick days, achoo! That's right, I got a cold coming on. Getting everyone in the same room, it's impossible. You can't do it. Don't even try. Forget it. Use GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting brought to you by Citrix. You can share screens to work together on documents, spreadsheets, and projects in real time without getting all germy. Use your webcams. Make your meeting an HD video conference. Start hosting a meeting in seconds from your Mac, PC, smartphone, or tablet. All you got to do is sign up for free. That's right, free. A free 30-day trial. See how I go up octaves? 30 days. Free. No credit card required. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click on the Try It Free button. Use the promo code Adam. That's GoToMeeting.com. Promo code Adam.
He's the porcelain punisher, Fondelier. It's his ass we're smelling, and our eyes are welling up with some tears. He's the porcelain punisher, Fondelier. If it's plop, plop in the toilet, you plus the sound of him groaning, the bowl's overflowing, you know to stay clear. It's the porcelain punisher, the porcelain punisher. Fondelier.
Nice job, Dick Banks. Bret Easton Ellis here. He's got a new podcast. Bret Easton Ellis podcast, and Kanye West, I noticed, was on there, Marilyn Manson, Judd Apatow. Available, new episodes, by the way, available Tuesday on iTunes, and you can go to Podcast One if you like. Good to see you, Bret.
Hey, Adam, how are you doing?
Good. I just read here. We were just talking about American Psycho the other day, but I'm not sure why.
Just came up. I was doing a review. I do a movie segment here once a week, mm-hmm. Called Hooray for Baldywood, and I was reviewing American Psycho. American Hustle. Christian Bale was tremendous in that, and I was opining that he was one of our finest actors and had tremendous range. And American Psycho came up, which is one of my very favorite films.
Yeah, he does have tremendous range, but he hasn't been able to show it for a long time. I think American Hustle is the first movie where he's not locked into the Batman mask, and he's actually playing a character. You know, he hasn't really had that opportunity for a long time. Maybe, and he hasn't been as funny in a movie since American Psycho, I don't think.
I thought he was unintentionally funny in The Fighter. I mean, some of the things he did were playing against a lot of the heaviness in that film.
Well, that was a pretty dramatic role. Yeah. And again, he did the dramatic weight loss compared to the dramatic weight gain for American Hustle. Mm-hmm. But no, you're right. The Fighter was pretty –
Well, he was sort of like in Raging Bull, Joe Pesci was screaming at his wife, "I'm going to stab you with a fork," but it was funny. at the time. Like, Joe Pesci's character wasn't a comedic character in that movie. Another movie about boxers, mm-hmm. another sidekick who was being sort of funny without trying to be funny, I guess.
Right. But the Christian Bale character in The Fighter, I mean, is such a major drug addict that I don't know if it's funny or not. I mean, he doesn't get those comic riffs that Joe Pesci does in Raging Bull.
Right.
You know, those rages that are so outlandish that you have to laugh at them.
Yes.
And especially the banter between him and De Niro in that is hysterical. But it's just so profane and crazy and, you know, based on so little.
Yeah.
They get pissed off at each other for so little.
I have a question for you. If American Psycho came out now, what do you think would be the reaction versus what it was then? Like, I'm just wondering, do you feel like people are more okay with stuff that's graphic?
I think it's just the nature of how we read books and how books are dealt with in the culture. They definitely don't have the same place that they do when American Psycho was published, or at least a novel. Let's not say, you know, there are certain – Malcolm Gladwell has books come out that sell, you know, a gazillion copies, and people talk about those books. That's nonfiction too. But the big novel that comes out that gets everyone talking for a long time, for a sustained period, I don't know if it really exists in the culture so much, or it's in a much smaller part of the culture. So if American Psycho came out now, would there be a lot of talk about the violence and the pornography in it? Compared to what else is available to us?
Fifty Shades of Grey.
Well, 50 Shades of Grey is like nothing compared to, you know, what American Psycho is. But, you know, when that book was published in the early 90s, I mean, what was available to us in terms of what could shock us or upset us? I mean, we didn't have the access that we do now. So when a book came out or an NC-17 movie was art house, people wanted to go. They were curious because they were going to have an experience they couldn't get anywhere else.
Well, I mean, first off, just something like Last Tango in Paris was a big deal, you know.
Big deal,
wouldn't have been a big deal today at all.
Not at all.
But we don't have time for big deals anymore. I mean, it's just everything is moving so quickly that no matter who it is or what happens, we're just on to the next news cycle.
Well, the problem with that, of course, is that that then renders everything disposable. It just feels disposable. So much of what's coming out in terms of film or music or, you know, a band that you're interested in who like hits for like a week on iTunes. And then it's, you know, there's just so much content flooding.
Yes.
Flooding toward us that it's, you know, it's hard to just land on something and have something really speak for itself for a long period of time. And a long period of time is what, a month? I mean, how long do even the most popular movies, you know, play theatrically?
Well, like, I just had a crazy thought, but what if the Beatles hit tomorrow? They'd have a bunch of good songs and people would like them. And I guess, you know, Beyonce's kept fairly relevant for a few years. But would the Beatles be the Beatles?
No.
They just couldn't overwhelm or not. Like if they played Ed Sullivan, half the country, you know, if they did The Tonight Show, half the country would not tune in to watch them on that. I don't know if Lucy could be Lucy or Elvis could be Elvis. I don't know.
Norman Mailer, or Ernest Hemingway to just name
what bands
writers.
Were those dudes? Oh, different.
I'm sorry. I haven't gotten onto the level yet. I'm sorry. I'm getting there. Okay.
Now, did you grow up in the San Fernando Valley?
I grew up in Sherman Oaks on Valley Vista Boulevard.
Wow, right along the Wash there.
Yeah, I did. I was born and raised there. Yeah.
I got arrested on Valley Vista.
I almost got arrested on Valley Vista.
That ran along the river, right?
No.
Was on the other side of Ventura Boulevard?
On the other side
of Ventura Boulevard. The other one was Valley Heart.
Okay, no. Valley Heart's way deep in the valley. We're talking about Sherman Oaks in between Studio City and Encino.
No, I know, but what runs along the L.A. River there? Is it Valley, Valley Heart?
I have no idea.
It is Valley Heart. Yeah. I got my Valley Hearts and my Valley Vistas screwed up. No, I grew up in North Hollywood. So.
Okay, so you know.
Village.
So Wait, what did you each do to get arrested or almost arrested?
You must have went to Grant or something like that.
Oh, no. I'm going to expose something about myself now. I went to Buckley.
Walla-dee-da. Still have the blazer?
I don't know if I still have the blazer, but I thought those uniforms were kind of rocking. I like those uniforms. I thought they were, out of all the L.A. school uniforms, I thought the Buckley uniform was actually the most stylish.
It actually came with gray poupon.
When I coached JV football at Harvard Westlake, that was the one team I knew we could beat. Buckley.
Well,
yeah, well, I mean, when I was going to Buckley, I mean, look, the truth was, I mean, there was a year where I guess all the private schools, you know, had their the football games more or less for the season. And I remember the one season that I played, everyone was so wasted that there wasn't a touchdown.
Really?
There wasn't a touchdown.
So what was the plan for you growing up? You went to a good school. You went to school. So you went to college.
Yeah.
I'm guessing. Where'd you go?
Went to – just don't play that fancy music again when I say where I'm going. Actually, I don't think you've ever heard of it. It's a really, really tiny art school in Vermont called Bennington College.
That still sounds
Bennington.
I've heard of Bennington.
But literally, like we're talking about like 550 kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was
where
it's a Seven Sisters school.
It's
right?
In Bennington, Vermont.
Wow,
it's really small.
How can you? You can't get any further away from Sherman Oaks than Vermont.
I wanted to get away.
So that's what I was about to say.
How did you find it?
It's one of the really good schools.
Look, my grades were not great. The only thing I was really interested in was writing,
mm-hmm.
and I wasn't interested in anything else. And I was writing from a really early age, so I moved through school kind of bored. All I wanted to do was write and play music. I was in bands,
mm-hmm.
and I was not interested in science or algebra or anything else. And so my grades weren't good. And so the guidance counselor at the school said, look, you're not going to get into any of these places. Here are some small art schools, liberal arts schools, where you can study writing that you have a chance of getting into. And one of the things about Bennington that was so appealing was that they didn't look at your SAT scores. They didn't look at your GPA. They looked at what you sent them. Like, mm-hmm. okay, I want to be, say, a painter. So you send in your sketches, your drawings. Mm. I want to be a musician. You send in tapes.
Right.
And so I sent in writing, and that's basically how I got in.
And but you said you wanted to get away. I mean, because, especially Vermont, you know, now everyone just jumps on a Southwest flight everywhere, but Vermont years ago was way the hell out there.
You still can't fly directly.
Yeah,
Vermont.
I didn't even. I didn't know where Vermont was when I was in high school. So, were you trying to get away from your family?
It wasn't my family so much. It was that really was a school that had a reputation as the best riding school in the country at that time. Second probably to Iowa, but still Bennington had that reputation. And, you know, the added incentive was, again, no GPA, no SAT scores.
Right.
And the teachers there were impressive to me. The writing teachers were there. I liked the fact that you could take these small tutorials with them, which meant 3 to 4 kids per course.
Mm-hmm.
So it all looked really good. And also the campus was beautiful. It was up in the hills of Vermont, and it was, you know, this kind of angelic, idyllic place to go to college. And I wanted to get just more away from L.A., I didn't want to. My dad wanted me to go to USC and pursue, go to business school.
Yeah.
And because he was worried, he thought, how are you going to make it as a writer? And he had a point. I understand where his fear came from. But, you know, when you're 18, you just don't think like that. And so,
well, you know, it's funny. You only hear from writers who've made it and musicians who've made it and comedians who've made it whose parents didn't want them. There could be a 7,000-hour documentary about the parents that said, don't be a comedian and don't be a writer and don't start a band who are fucking right. Most of them
are right. That's part of the iceberg under
the
water.
True.
It's funny because we only hear the success stories because no one wants to hear from the guy who's working at Costco when he should have listened to his dad and went to USC.
Right. But who are the parents who actually do encourage their kids to pursue, you know, a life in the arts? You know, maybe when you're out of college, you can do it.
Oh, the Arquettes. That's all I can think of.
They're
the only
right.
parents historically have ever
really?
Encouraged anybody. I think they were pretty encouraging. Judging by the results and judging by what they did for a living, I would say the Arquettes were fairly encouraging.
I
don't think there's any way like a 17-year-old David Arquette could have said to his dad, oh, no. You know, his dad would have went, there's no way you're ever going to make a nickel in this business when that's the only thing the family ever did. Yeah, it'd be like one of the Kennedys saying, there's no way you're ever going to make it in politics. That I feel like there are cats. Other than that, I can't think of anyone.
The Phoenixes.
In the Phoenixes.
Yeah.
That's
right. I think
they
were very supportive of River.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they put him out on the street with tambourines and said, make some money.
And then
dance.
And then, of course, we're forgetting about, you know, show business mothers.
Yeah.
Who are still kind of, you know, living their own dreams through their daughters and trying to get them out.
I think what they want, though. Like, I know we all think they want their kids to be stars, but I just think they're a mess. Like, I'm not sure what they really think is going to happen.
Well, there's like the Toddlers and Tiaras moms.
There's the reality show. Let's land the reality show and see what happens from
so
there.
So was your dad a businessman?
My dad was a businessman, yeah. He worked at Coldwell Banker and then moved to his own company that he started in the early 80s.
And he just figured, well, get your degree in business and you'll always be able to fall back on that.
Well, no. My dad said, I'm not paying for college. I'm not paying for you to go to college in Bennington. It's not going to happen.
Right.
So your only option really is USC.
How did you pay for college?
I went over him to my grandfather. Smart. And I asked my grandfather, will you, you know, take care of this tuition that I have to pay mm-hmm. for Bennington? And he had a lot of issues with my dad. And he said, gladly. Gladly. Do you want to go to a more expensive school?
Was that your dad's dad?
My dad's dad, yeah.
How perfectly manipulative.
I know.
But smart.
It was crazy. It was the older I get and I look back on that time, I think, what a family. I don't know.
Wow. And so how mom and dad stay together?
No. you want to play the music again?
Sure.
No, my mom and dad divorced
uh-huh.
when I was 17. And so, yeah. I mean, but it wasn't uncommon among, you know, a lot of kids that I knew in L.A.
No, everyone.
There were divorces going on. There were families breaking up at a school I went to, at least.
Everyone I knew was divorced.
Yeah. So, I mean, it didn't – I wasn't – like divorce was not like the, you know, the psychic disaster that I think a lot of parents worried is – they worry that their kids are going to experience. I was glad.
I don't remember having feelings about my parents getting divorced. Like I know there's a lot of like, what about the kids? I remember thinking, good, let's get the mongoose and the snake out of the same fucking cage.
Yeah.
Can we do that?
Relief.
And
relief.
Then you guys can just go be poor and pathetic on either ends of the valley. On your own, though.
It's quite a pep talk.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, Dad, you can move to a shitbox in North Hollywood. Mom, you can stay in the same shitbox you're currently dying in. And this is going to be awesome.
All right, Quarles on three.
Get a hand in. That's right. Yeah, it wasn't. And I think most of my friends felt that way, too. Although, I don't think they felt special. It wasn't – I think if somebody said, you know, what about me? They'd go, what about you? It's your parents are getting divorced between them.
Right.
That's the way it sort of felt back then.
Right. And I learned a lot. You know, I learned a lot from not being, I guess, coddled, not being told I was so special, not getting the 4 gold stars, not, you know, getting
right.
on the losing team. We all still got like, you know – an award, a trophy. I mean, I didn't grow up in that era. And I think that it just taught me a lot of things about just growing up and, for lack of a better term, manning up to stuff. For example, with bullying, I was bullied. It taught me a lot of things. It taught me to be covert. It taught me what to avoid. It taught me that, you know, people are shitty. Kids are cruel, you know. And I moved on from that, you know. There was no other option. I mean, there weren't like bullying societies that you could go to where, you know, people helped you out. You were pretty much on your own. And
yeah.
in a strange way, you know, it. And I talked to a lot of guys who are my age that it really made them stronger in a way that, you know, you see kids today who are bullied in cyberspace committing suicide. And you start wondering what kind of bubble were they raised in where they're not even able to deal with that on a, you know, on a certain level. Where does that come from, and what does that say to us about ourselves as a society?
Well, I've said, by the way, I'm the only guy I know who takes the pro-bullying stance, but I say, you know, you have calluses on your fingers and on your feet for a reason. That skin gets toughened up a little bit so you can handle a hot pot or you can walk barefoot on some hot sand or across a driveway. If it was the kind of skin you had on your belly, it would be incredibly painful just to walk from your bed into the bathroom
right.
at night. You build up little calluses on things,
right.
and that's what nature kind of is. We're designed to build up a little callus in certain places. Now, we're not designed to be repeatedly stabbed. We're just designed to build up calluses, and a certain amount of adversity, I think, is good, especially for boys, but good for everybody. Not an overabundance of it,
no.
not being physically harmed, but that element of growing up in a zero gravity environment, you lose muscle mass, you lose bone density.
Well, what happens is then when you really hit the disappointments in life that we all have, I mean, loss, death, you know, then you collapse. You're just not you're not able to even handle someone criticizing you.
Well, it feels like a betrayal. So you're like, what?
Right. Yeah. And that's not normal, I don't think. And that's something that's
well,
I don't know, worrying.
Look, my feeling is if it's brand new, it's probably not normal and it's probably not incredibly healthy either. Like the things that never existed, we've talked about it a million times. My kids was announced that my son needed to wear a corrective helmet. I'm like, why? Why does he need a corrective helmet? Well, he's 6 months old and the skull is asymmetry. And I'm like, how come nobody I ever grew up with had a corrective helmet? I've never even heard of this.
Right.
Why now? Why do we need it now? We've not evolved that much. It's only been, you know, 30 years. Why so much? And Allison's got a story about the antibacterial hand soap and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, I don't think that stuff that's 10 minutes old is always good or at least necessary. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, this kicked into overdrive about 5 years ago, and we've all decided it's the most important thing in the world. I don't know.
Well, I think it started before 5 years ago. I mean, what about the Adderall epidemic? I mean, mm-hmm. pretty much everybody I know in their 20s were put on Adderall in their teen years. And it's just they take them, you know, like vitamins. And is it really needed? There was a very interesting article on the front page of the New York Times on Sunday about tracing the medical movement of creating this drug and the decade-long way to get it prescribed. You know, mm-hmm. really, it was a process. It was like a building that was under the, you know, auspices of a very smart architect. They had the drug. How do we get it to the kids? And so they started to talk about ADD,
right.
bipolar disorder. And it was a drug that was so profitable. The profits were going to be so enormous that they couldn't really let go of that amount of money, that
sure.
kind of profit for the medical, you know, for the drug companies. So that's one place I think where it started.
Well, yeah. I've been yelling about service dogs on every fucking flight. That's about 10 minutes old. Everyone was able to get along without a service dog. There was an occasional blind guy. If you're Your dog needs a luggage rack attached to it that you're hanging on to. If it's just the 20-foot cord or it's in a basket that you're carrying, it's ironic that the service dog, you're schlepping the service dog? I thought you were supposed to be riding the service dog.
You're like service human.
Yeah, you're the one who's toting around the service dog. But again, this stuff didn't exist and now everyone needs it and you know, handicapped parking used to be for handicapped people, not people that had, you know, Epstein-Barr virus or whatever the fuck they think is going on.
Can we go back for 1 second? Mm. Do you guys believe ADD exists? Is it a condition?
I've been around long enough to hear about a lot of syndromes. And we're all – here's what – no. There's not a boy I grew up with – who on a summer day wanted to sit in class, who did not want to run outside chase something or smash something or throw something. You take a 9-year-old boy, you set them behind a desk, and you tell them to sit there for an hour and listening to some sort of asexual old broad in her 50s with her hair up weird explain something about the Civil War, and every single one of them is going to be looking out the window and tapping their foot, dying to get out there and play a little Foursquare, whatever it is. That's how at least guys are wired. I can't speak to women, but this is all prescribed to guys, or mainly prescribed to guys. And it's like, he can't sit still because you're boring as shit. You're talking about a war that's 250 years old and the sun is shining.
Right. But at the same time, I mean, when I was a kid, I mean, I know that I was taken to task for watching too much TV, for, you know, liking punk rock. Like, what in the hell is the world coming to?
Right.
You're seeing a band that, you know, has razor blade slices all over them and have pins in their ears. I mean, oh, my God, kids today. We can almost sound like that when we're discussing what's going on now. I just think that it's harmful. There's a kind of a harm attached to what's going on in terms of the – what do you want to call it? The baby coddling of, you know,
or
this generation.
Infantilizing.
And just infantilizing of this generation and seeing what's going to happen. What's going to happen when they become adults and have to deal with the shit that is life, you know? That's the worry.
Yeah, a lot of lawsuits and not a lot of storming of beaches at Normandy. Go to meeting. This is where the heroes reside. Go to meeting. Holidays coming around, weather's getting bad, people getting sick, not coming into the office. Well, go to meeting. You can use it. It gets the whole band back together. Brought to you by Citrix. You can share the screen. You can work together on documents, spreadsheets, and projects in real time. Use your webcam and have a nice HD video conference. Start hosting meetings in seconds on your Mac, your PC, smartphone, tablet, and sign up for free. 30 days, a free trial. 30 days, no credit card required. Visit gotomeeting.com, click on the try it free button, use the promo code Adam. That's gotomeeting.com, promo code Adam. All right, Brett, we're going to do a little news. You hang out, crack wise. Should we do a little news, Allison Rosen?
Yes.
The news with Allison Rosen.
She'll read some news from her iPad. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. It's Allison, Allison. And when it's time to wrap it up, she'll sign it off with Zip It Cut. It's Allison, Allison.
So, Adam, you wanted to talk about this article about secondhand smoke. It's from Forbes.
I did.
A large-scale study found no clear link between secondhand smoke and lung cancer.
What?
A study of 76,000 women found cancer to be 13 times more common in current smokers and 4 times more common in past smokers. However, no statistically significant relationship was found between lung cancer and exposure to passive smoke.
I've been screaming about this for well over a decade. And the reason I've been screaming about this is we have a infinite amount of time on the planet. And a finite amount of problems. And what you want to do is you sink your resources and time, work big to small. The secondhand smoke thing, they've been beating this drum for 20 years now. It's just nonstop. Like every fucking commercial I see is a guy smoking and it's going up his own. It's going through the outlet and it's going up the conduit and then it goes into the next bedroom of the upstairs and there's an infant laying in the
crib,
whatever.
Right.
And you just, there's a part of you that goes, oh, that poor kid. And then there's part of you goes, wait a minute, everyone smoked all the time. And then they invented third hand smoke, and that's when I got pissed off. That's when it gets into the curtains and the clothing of people, and you expose service dogs to it, and they all get lung cancer. And I said, there's no fucking way it's that big a problem. And it's not, but here's the deal. I know you would like people to stop smoking. There's a lot of stuff we would like people to stop doing. But what you can't do, and I feel like we've done a lot of this, is you make up statistics to get people to stop doing things. So, right. You know, I can say to my kids, hey, if you don't do your homework, you're going to get a brain tumor. Sorry, Brian. Brian has a brain tumor.
My time?
And I didn't do my homework.
Now you're going to get a brain tumor. It's not right. What you need to do is you try to dissuade people from doing whatever they're doing. But if you start lying, it's like what they used to do with pot. They used to say, oh, you'll go crazy. It'll make you insane. It's a drug. It's every bit as bad as heroin and cocaine. And then people smoked and they went, oh, I guess you were lying. No big deal. And now you've created the second problem. All I'm saying is whatever the topic is, just give us the truth about it. Don't invent something. I mean, secondhand smoke was really just invented. And we could have been watching PSAs for proper tire inflation, which would have saved more lives. There's more people die every year when their tires blow out on the freeway and their SUVs roll than there are from secondhand smoke. I say that with some certainty because nobody dies of secondhand smoke. So put it into whatever makes sense. Don't put it into something that you've made up to feel good about yourself.
It's like the person who says show up at 7, but they don't need you there till 8.
Yes.
That happened to me tonight.
There you go.
But anyway, but I think that the
where were you?
I think that, you know, it's worked because where I live, smoking is banned on the streets, basically. You can't smoke anywhere in West L.A. No restaurants. Buildings are even being the building that I live in is wants to pass a law that no one can smoke in the building.
I like when they say 100% smoke free. I grew up as in the. I just love that we are hotels do that. You know, 100% smoke free. Oh, it's definitely worked. I've always said this is why this is what the NRA does, and this is sure this is why the NRA does what the NRA does, because they saw what happened to the smokers. Smokers used to just smoke everywhere,
right?
And then at a certain point, they said, "Hey guys, in the restaurant smoking, you mind just moving over to a section over here and smoking with the other smokers?" And they all got up and they moved over there and they sat down. And then at a certain point, some guy came in and said, "If you're going to smoke, we just need you to move it to the bar. You can smoke in the bar. That's fine." And then everyone got up, picked up their ashtrays, and they moved to the bar. And at a certain point, someone said, "We need you outside." And then all the smokers walked out front. And then somebody said, "We need you down the street. You can't smoke in front."
Right.
That's why the NRA goes, "Fucking banana clips? No, we're keeping them." Like they don't want to get out of the restaurant.
Yeah,
they're scared if they move to that section of the restaurant, then they're going to go to the bar, then they're going to go to the street, then they're going to go down the street. So they're smart. They just argue in the restaurant and never stop that argument. And the smoke has been the same thing. Now the building is smoke-free. There's people like you can't smoke on the balcony of your apartment unit because it floats up into the next one.
Right. That's what my building is trying to get past. I don't think it's really going to happen because I think there's still people who are suspicious of this secondhand smoke propaganda.
Well, it's a first-rate killer. At least that's what they say. It's a secondhand smoke. It's a first-rate killer, except for nobody dies.
Catchy.
Of it.
Right.
Right. All right. Now, are all those people going to now apologize to us for lying?
It's very unlikely.
Well, I feel like probably not.
They're just liars.
Get Rob Ryan on the
show. I don't like people that – I don't like the righteous liars where they go, "I can lie about this because it's going to save lives." So I can lie.
Do you think most liars are righteous? I mean, there's a few just sort of people white liars.
Yeah,
but
everybody – I don't think people who lie think of themselves as liars.
Exactly.
That's my thing. But anyway, just let it be known, I was on the record since the mid-90s screaming about this has got to be bullshit. And now finally, somebody with the guts to let it be known I'm right.
An important PSI question.
Mm.
One of my tires is 3 pounds over. How bad is that?
Nothing.
Okay, good.
No, but there are a lot of people driving around with like 11 pounds in one tire and 41 in the next, and that's where the trouble. Not to mention just all the fuel it wastes when you're driving around 20 pounds down, and all the vulcanized rubber and resources it wastes because you're having to wear the tire down, and it goes on and on. There's 1,000 topics that could be hit, but we've spent my entire adult life talking about secondhand smoke, which doesn't really exist as a problem. Anyway, we're fucking geniuses.
And an article here about antibacterial hand soap.
Another thing I've been complaining about.
This is from an FDA news release. Millions of Americans use antibacterial hand soap and body wash products. Although consumers generally view these products as effective tools to help prevent the spread of germs, there's currently no evidence that they are any more effective at preventing illness than washing with plain soap and water. Further, some data suggest that long-term exposure to certain active ingredients used in antibacterial products could pose health risks such as bacterial resistance or hormonal effects.
I've known that for a
careful.
Long time.
Everyone knows it. Or you should
crazy.
Know it intuitively.
Yes, you should. Right.
Again, the calluses. You got to build your immune system up.
Right.
Nature knows what it's doing.
Yeah.
We're fucking with nature.
Right.
We're trying to do – We are trying to fuck with nature.
Impose our will.
And it's not going to work.
Yeah.
It's not going to work for the pharmaceutical companies, and it's not going to work with the hand soap and all that shit. I never get sick. I never wash my hands. I don't use soap. I don't use shampoo. I don't use anything.
I don't either.
I rinse.
I don't either.
I just rinse with hot water.
I use all of it.
And everyone just goes, "You're gross." That's all they do is they go, "Ooh, gross." And I go, why? We're not designed to lather up every single day and scrub ourselves down. This is something that the Pantene cartel has been selling us.
Big Pantene.
Big Pantene.
Big poo.
That's right. Big poo. We don't need it.
But they put makeup on you for your TV shows and stuff.
Yes.
And you just let that wash off?
Everything is...
Or rinse off?
Everything is hot water. I take like a hot rinse. Or I do have a bottle of that Dr. Crazy Old Dude's peppermint flavored, you know, whatever. You can drink it. You can put it on your cereal. You can butt chug it. Like it's, you know what I'm talking about? Oh, there's a, we'll try to figure this one out. I've seen news shows on it. It's like.
I feel like I should, but I'm Dr. Bonner's.
Yes, Dr. Bonner's.
Yeah, I know that. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
like an all-purpose thing.
Yeah. I will give myself a spritz of that every once in a while and try to get the makeup out from underneath my eyelids. But that's about it with the makeup. And occasionally a little back sack action, just, you know, try to keep the marriage fresh.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Keep the spark going.
Keep the spark
alive. Wait, you don't regularly use soap down there?
Not regularly. Hot water will suffice. I don't – but see, here's why I know we don't need soap. Oh, there it is. First off, if I have a bottle of shampoo, it will last me 11 years, number one. Number two, there's no way – I always say this. It would be a horrible and cruel joke to all who came before us who did not have the Pantene option. And I know the whole shampoo conditioner, strip away the stuff, put it back. I know your hair does not benefit from this.
How do you feel about the fact that Adam does not use soap to wash his balls?
I don't know if you really need soap to wash.
Just answer the question.
I don't think you really need to. I think every now and then, yes, if you've been a little sweaty or if you've worked out or something, sure. But I think there is. I mean, when I was, living through the era of the rise of the metrosexual, when I was writing about Patrick Bateman and American Psycho. That's really when it started to come into play, where men needed all of these creams.
He's the anti-Corolla with all the creams and the mask and the peel.
And, you know, it was kind of the what you call the dandification of American men. And they started to believe in it. They believed that it made them look better. It made them believe they were more attractive to women. And in reality, it was just a huge money-making kind of scheme. I mean, it was – that's what it was. But it's still in the culture. I mean, it still is. Men believe this.
Here's my feeling, which is lip balm, chapstick, whatever, and hand cream only means you need more of it. It just creates a necessity for it. Once you start getting on the hand moisturizer, you're on. Once you get on the chapstick, you're on the chapstick. We're not designed to require chapstick. Especially because we're not spending hours.
My entire face feels very conspicuous right now.
Well, you're not spending hours. It's one thing if you're doing for an aesthetic appeal. Women do this,
right,
but for guys, if you're even if you're spending hours tilling soil in the fields, we're still not designed to need that. That's all I'm saying.
But I still think there's a kind of comfort level that you do need. I have dry skin.
I have combination skin with an oily T-zone.
I do need moisturizer, and it does lessen that kind of like tight. There it goes.
Yes, it can be.
I want that music to follow me around for the next week wherever I go. But so I do believe in that, and I do. There's like some good basic moisturizers that I think you should use, but otherwise, I think it is overboard, and I think the hand sanitation thing is incredibly annoying. You see it everywhere when you go to the market. You know, there's a little,
where
you can use all over
to wipe yourself. I mean,
rest.
If you're that much of a germaphobe, I just don't know how you're going to make it through the rest of society, the rest of your life.
Agreed. All right. What's next?
Well, here's a story that involves our guest at the San Diego show, the one who will be topless. Miley Cyrus tweeted a photo of herself, and she said, "Merry Christmas. Thank you, New York, for being one of the few states to free the nipple." And she is showing her chest, but there's two hearts over her boobs. Mm-hmm. And she is referring to the indie film Free the Nipple, and the director of that, Lena Esko, is going to be our guest for the second show in San Diego. And it's a movie about, my understanding of it is that it questions the way, it questions censorship in terms of the way we treat toplessness and nudity versus the way we treat violence in movies. And that much more lenient with violence.
I'm working on a doc called Back the Sack.
Oh.
It's where I feel like I want to walk out with just one ball.
I was going to say.
Just hanging out.
You have opportunities.
Ladies, if you can show your nipples.
We're on VPN.
I feel like Just a little sack.
You should live in my neighborhood, West Hollywood.
Really?
Feel right
no
at home problemo. If you want to do that.
Yeah. A lot of guys willing to back the sack.
A lot of guys. A lot of guys walk their dogs naked where I live. So you know,
really,
really.
Well, it's warm.
Late at night. Late at night.
Like totally naked?
Not totally naked. No, of course not totally naked, but very skimpily clothed. Very little covered. Not left to the imagination.
Wow. Just a hint of clothing.
I like Miley Cyrus now, although not attracted to her. Mm. Don't find her attractive. Mm. Are guys attracted to her?
I think she's viewed as generally attractive.
Do you want to snap off a piece of that, Brian?
I think there's a difference between attractive and sexy. I think she has like a vibe to her that is kind of maybe sexy or sexual, but I don't think you would call her traditionally attractive. I don't think she could be a model.
Mm. I mean, look,
maybe she could. I don't know.
I mean, when you have like 100 million hits on a video like Wrecking Ball in a week, I think a lot of men are watching that because they find that
she's over 18. Wait, she's over 18, right?
She's 20.
Okay.
Yeah, she's 20.
Sexy.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, and Terry Richardson, who directed the video, is our age. He's a bit of a perv, likes mm-hmm. them young, and he shot that for maximum impact, more or less. And I think it worked in terms of the response it got. So I don't know. I think a lot of guys do find Miley sexy. Mm. I think she's...
I feel like she must be under a lot of pressure sexually. You know, I mean, she can't mail it in the sack.
Oh,
you know
I
what
see.
I mean?
She rides that wrecking ball, for God's sake.
Like, if you got together with Miley and she just sort of mailed it in, you'd be really disappointed and you'd hit the Twitter and the social media pretty quick. Like, I feel like she's got to be, you know, she's got to be dynamite in the sack.
Well, and she was with Liam Hemsworth for 4 years. I don't know. He's a pretty big catch. Mm-hmm. There must be a reason. That's long term for people in their 20s. 4 years.
4 years?
They were 4 years. Yeah, together 4 years. They broke up this past summer. And some say that song Wrecking Ball is about the fallout of that relationship.
Someone knows a lot about Miley Cyrus.
I
do know a lot about Miley because I do think this last year she was pretty much the performer of 2013. She really did. There were a number of things that she did that were very pivotal in the culture and in pop culture landscape. And I think those videos, I think the VMA performance – I don't know. I think she's cool. I like her.
I'm going to try to clear Wrecking Ball for Back the Sack documentary.
Try that.
Because I feel it'd be very appropriate.
Came in like a Wrecking Ball.
That's right. Sherry's Berries, baby. Speaking of appropriate, only $19.99 for beautiful, giant, dripping with chocolate. Milk chocolate's going to dip and drip. Anyway, dipped in milk chocolate, dark chocolate, white chocolate, and... unbelievable. By the way, you can get double the berries for just $10 more. These things are ginormous. They're unbelievable. It's just, it's a great time we're living in. Also, they got dipped pretzels and cheesecakes and all sorts of other great stuff over there. Sherry's Berries never disappoints. Berries.com. You go to berries.com. You click on the microphone. You type in Ace. Only way to get the $19.99 special is use the offer. The Ace offer. Or give them a call, 866-FRUIT-02. That's 866-FRUIT-02. Or online, berries.com. Click on the microphone, top right-hand corner. Type in Ace. Deal expires this Friday. All right, baby girl, let's do, one and a half more stories. What do you got?
Well, I know you enjoy local news fuck-ups. Mm-hmm. So here's a little video out of Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
This is all the time we have for this Saturday night. Saturday Night Live is next with a new one with John Goodman as host. We'll be back tomorrow after football. Hope to see you then. Let's get the fuck out of here.
He didn't realize that the mic was hot.
I love that. Now, no one's ever offended anymore. We just like it. But... you got to know when that mic's clipped you. Like, that guy was no rookie. He looked like he'd been around the block a few times, been to a few smaller markets, started out, worked his way up.
If you fuck me, you're dead.
Pat O'Brien.
They said to his audio guy.
When you hear, you're still hearing the music, just keep it zipped. Mm-hmm. You know, there should be, they do it in whenever you do a TV show or anything, they do the 30 seconds of silence.
Room tone or whatever?
Room tone. It's incredibly hard to pull off. It's the weirdest thing in the world. It is a weird human thing. There'll be one guy with the headphones on, and he's got the boom mic, and he goes, okay, everybody, there's only four people in the room. I just need to get 30 seconds of silence so I can get room tone. And he'll go like, and here we go. And at some point, someone will go, Steve, you want to go Arby's for lunch? And then he'll go, hold on a second. Guys, just 30 seconds
still
of room tone.
Room tone.
And he'll get 8 seconds in, and someone will be like, like, this feels. And then someone will start walking, and the floor will squeak, yeah. And I'll be like, could everyone just carve out 30 seconds of their life and fucking hold still just so we can get the 30 seconds of room tone? It's weird how tall an order. All four people remain silent and motionless for 30 seconds. No one ever says, I need 18 to 22 months of room tone. They just go, 30 seconds. 30 fucking seconds cannot be done. I always laugh at the 10 seconds of silence, which can and that doesn't work in church. It doesn't work. Whenever they do that thing where they go, the great boxing trainer, Lou DiBella. Oh, no, wait a minute. He's a Hollywood guy. Let's see. I'm trying to think of the great boxing trainer.
Customato?
Yeah. Manny Stewart. Now, the traditional ring 10 count, a moment of silence for the great boxing trainer, Emmanuel Stewart. And I'll be ding. They'll get three into it, and some guy in the audience will be like, hey, I need a beer! And like, can't you just make it 10 seconds? I think they used to make it 10 seconds. There's Emmanuel Stewart. There, thank you. He trains the Klitschko's. All right, let's do one more, baby girl.
Okay. The mic thing that makes me uncomfortable when I think about it is how many times because you show up to be a guest on a TV show and someone comes in and they're like, mic you up? And they mic you up in advance of when you go on. Mm-hmm. And then you use the bathroom. Mm-hmm. Now, who's listening?
You turn it off.
It's the naked gun.
See, I never,
you turn
I
it
should
off.
Have.
I learned that through the difficult way. I learned that once. So
what, had someone told you?
Yeah, someone said, hey, we heard you pissing in the men's room, and you got to turn that off if you're going to use the bathroom. It's very easy. It's just a click.
Yeah.
The sound guy is supposed to allegedly pot you down, but God knows. I mean.
I'll say pissing could have been a lot worse.
Yeah.
For you.
That's true. But didn't happen.
As I've said before, they put these fucking mics on you. You know, I did a shoot. I think it was a man show shoot where I was, it was Shop Teacher Adam. And I did the bit, and we were working with a new director, and she was horrible. And I kept pulling the writer aside, and I was like, she's fucking nuts. We got to go around her. She doesn't know what she's doing. We're just going to take forever. She's incompetent, and she's a cunt. I was like, I hate this woman. We got to work around her. We got to get it done. And so, like, she kept saying, like, all right, let's go back in the class, and then we'll go to the bandsaw, and then I'd go, well, give us a second, and then I'd pull the writer's side, and I'd go, we got to fucking do something because she's fucking this bit up. It's not going to be salvageable. And then she went into the edit bay. And when she went into the edit bay to edit the bit together, she had to comb through all the parts of me talking to the writer about how horrible she was. And then she felt also compelled to tell me that she heard all about, which I would not do if I were her. But she said I was the boss, so she couldn't really do anything. But she went, just got out of the edit bay, was watching some of the rough footage, heard a lot of the audio. Thanks for the compliments she gave me. Which I understand I had coming, but I would argue it's also uncomfortable for her as well.
I have the same problem on the Today Show. Similar story, but with Katie Couric.
What happened?
Where I was booked to be on the Today Show to promote a novel of mine. Katie didn't really want to do the segment, wasn't necessarily a fan, thought I was too dark to be on that first hour of the Today Show. And so she kept subtly eliminating my 6 or 7 minutes of time. And so it got to 5 minutes, it got to 4 minutes, and so I mic'd.
Meaning,
and
were they stretching out the segments before you?
They were stretching out the segments before me, and so I was basically going to get 3 minutes. And I was mic'd, didn't realize it, was kind of stressed by the whole situation, and I started going off on Katie Couric to the Today people who are handling me and to my people in the publishing house. And everyone could hear it over in the
control
room. Got back to Katie, and I was banned from the Today Show.
Really?
Yeah.
I did the segment.
But from then on, I was told, you're banned from the Today Show.
You think that was Katie?
Kerr goes on. Yeah. It was really.
Remember, I was talking shit about her the other week. Now I'm
glad. You're banned too.
I don't like her.
So I don't know.
I think I said she's one of these people. If her name was Geraldine Gutenstein, I don't think we'd know who she was.
That seems like not a great enough offense to be banned. Because I just imagine with all the guests who are nervous to go on, there's got to that. I don't know what you're saying, but must come up all the time.
I was upset, and I said, you know, she really doesn't like me. She's such a bitch. Why is she being such a bitch about this one segment? And that it didn't get worse than that, but I said bitch. I called her bitch.
Did you get the band? There's two kinds of bands. There's the kind of band where, geez, it's been 9 years since I've been on this show, and I used to be on all the time. That's a quiet banning.
No.
That's a shun more than a ban. And then there's the declaration of you shall not be on this show.
The next day, my publisher called me and said they called us up screaming that, you know, that got all over the studio. They just told us you're effectively banned from that show. But I've been on it a lot. I promoted pretty much every book up until that one on the Today Show.
Well, it worked. The ban worked.
It did.
Well, let's bring it home, baby girl.
That's the news. I'm Allison Rosen. Zip it, cunts.
That was the news with Allison Rosen.
Stole that from Katie. DraftKings, baby. DraftKings.com. The Millionaire Grand Final coming up this weekend. You could win $1 million. I got a little tip for you. Vernon Davis helped a DraftKings player win $25,000. What a specimen that Vernon Davis is. Plus, what a name.
Yeah.
You're either going to be called Vern or Vernon. Win.
Either way, you win.
Yeah. Another big performance for Vernon Davis could mean you get $1 million. One Day Fantasy Sports, not the old drawn-out long season. You're back every week. Paul Bryan, how you feeling, man?
So the dust has settled on my 200-point-plus-point performance.
Bonanza.
It was the finest fantasy moment of my life. I ended up entering 4 contests last weekend, finished first place in 3 of them and second place in the other. It was a banner week. I don't know if I can ever do better.
Juggernaut. Dawson.
If you hurry, you can get free entry into the Millionaire Grand Final happening this weekend only. Enter promo code Adam at DraftKings.com for your free shot to be crowned a fantasy football millionaire. But you got to enter Adam today at DraftKings.com. For details and your free entry, visit DraftKings.com. DraftKings.com.
All right. We're going to be doing some live podcasting. Long Beach, Chicago, Buffalo coming up. You can go to amcroll.com. You want to find out where the live stand-up is, where the live podcasts are coming from. But we will be coming to a town near you soon enough. Also, the store got some new T-shirts and new hats and new mugs and new cool stuff. Go there if you like. AdamCarolla.com/store. Amazon, you know what to do with the banner. Just click on through, show a little love, and Mangria, back and better than ever. Go to CorollaDrinks.com and click on the shop button. Yes, Allison Rosen.
Oh, yes, and I just wanted to let people know that Allison Rosen is your new best friend. My podcast will be releasing new episodes during the break, so don't despair. My episodes will be there.
She is a workaholic, and she's Jewish and hates Christmas. Anyway, Bret Easton Ellis, the podcast, Bret Easton Ellis podcast, lots of big names on iTunes or podcast1.com, and the website, bretteastonellis.com, is where you go, and you can Twitter him at Bret Easton Ellis and David Wild. And until next time, this is Adam Kroll for Bret and David and Allison and Bald saying, mahalo. The chicks.
Exactly.
The bitch is called your cat.
Subscribe to YouTube.com/VPN to watch the show live each week and YouTube.com/Adam Carolla for the archive of past shows. Live podcast at the American Comedy Club in San Diego tonight. Tickets and info on all of our live podcasts, stand-up, Mangria events, and more. Visit AdamCarolla.com.